Hello there, I'm John Ryan here from the Work Healthy Podcast. Thank you very much for joining us today. Can I ask you a quick question to kick off? What generation are you from? And do you think it makes any difference in the workplace? It is interesting that for the first time ever, we're soon going to have five generations interacting, collaborating, and hopefully learning from each other in the workplace. And that diversity, I'm sure you'll agree, can be absolutely wonderful, but it can also bring some problems. So maybe we should take a little bit of time to learn about each other and our preferences so that we can work together more successfully. And today I'm really delighted to have Dr. Mary Collins, who's from the Royal College of Surgeons, and she's done extensive research on this very topic. So in today's podcast, she takes us through the differences between all of those five generations. She'll give us advice on managing each other, and she'll tell us which ones are most likely to struggle with each other. And finally, the effect that social media has had in smoothing those differences. I started today's interview by asking Mary to position our conversation by outlining the key differences between those generations, starting with the baby boomers.
So our baby boomer generation, firstly, so they are born, and again, roughly 1946 up to 64, the post-war generation, typically born into large families where children were seen but not heard. And again, all of these factors shape the behaviours in the workplace. So we know that boomers tend to be very loyal. They really value experience, value hierarchy in organizations. And when we look at their communication preferences, face-to-face where possible, more formal email communication. I think boomers have deep smarts. Professor Dorothy Leonard in Harvard has written a book called Deep Smarts. It's as close as we can get to wisdom. And boomers bring that resilience to our teams. I think, you know, we're seeing them exiting the workforce now at a pace with retirements. And I think we're really going to miss, actually, the real experience and wisdom of boomers as they do exit. So then we move on to Gen X, which I might boldly assume, John, you might be part of, as am I.
maybe. Yeah, absolutely.
So proudly. Roughly 65 up to about 1980. And we are the smallest workforce generation, believe it or not. And Gen X are really interesting because when you think about what was happening, you know, during growing up in the 70s and 80s, you know, typically a lot of poverty, difficult economic climate. Gen Xers tend to be very pragmatic, a little bit cynical. They tend to like autonomy and independence. And when you think about this generation as well, that they are burdened. They truly are the sandwich generation. So from a workplace perspective, we have people dealing with sick elderly parents, teenagers, indeed young children with mothers having babies much later now. So a lot going on for Gen Xers, a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, but that sort of autonomy and independence, the work hard, play hard sort of approach. And even thinking back to how they grew up, if you were like me, you would, you know, go out on the road and play, even think about that, and come back when it's dark. So a very free range parenting, we call it that. And then we move on to our millennials, also known as Gen Y. So millennials, typically born then from 1980 up to about 95, often, you know, referred to as quite an entitled generation, you know, the Celtic Tiger Cubs, all of that sort of came with the millennials. And I think a lot of overcompensation actually in their parenting and a lot of helicopter parenting. And again, we see the impact of all that in the workplace. But millennials very focused on purpose at work, global issues, very aware of diversity, inclusion, growth and development, really key for millennials, and feedback. That comes up in all the studies. Millennials really need feedback to do well. And again, we're starting now to hit our digital native generation. So millennials would be the first digital natives. But moving on then to our Gen Z population, the true digital native, so Gen Z, typically born 1995 up to about 2010, so the youngest generation in our workforce at the moment. And Gen Z, sadly, are the generation with the highest rates of loneliness, anxiety, depression, very low levels of stress tolerance, and we can go into why all that might be. It's mm-hmm. very complex, multifactorial. But what we do know about our true digital natives is they are going to need a lot more support from their leaders in the workplace. And we know supportive leadership comes up time and time again. In order for them to really flourish at work, they're going to need a lot of support around their well-being. A lot of flexibility is very important for them. So work-life balance is a key value and priority. And again, in terms of communication and learning, everything, digital, just in time, laser sharp, micro-learning sessions, very, very short attention spans. So this is really a wonderful mix of yep. people having gone through very different experiences in their formative years that now are working side by side.
So that's what really defines then a generation. It's not an actual amount of time. It's basically what's been going on and what are the monumental things that have happened, particularly around technology. Is that right?
Absolutely, John. Yes. So this what was happening in society with technology, with parenting, the socioeconomic climate, if you think the global pandemic, that's going to have shaped a generation as well. So all of those factors, the formative experiences when people are growing up.
Okay. So and just to get this kind of bang up to date, the people who are entering the workforce now, like if I'm 16 now and going to be entering the workforce, as many do at that young age, what am I?
So that'll be a Gen Z. So
Gen Z.
The one coming up behind Gen Z are Gen Alpha. Okay. So born from 2010 onwards. So yeah, you're right. They're on the cusp of if they're apprentices or yeah.
Okay. And any inkling of how they're different to Gen Z or Z?
Well, I think Gen Alpha, they have experienced the direct impact of the pandemic on their very young years, developmental years, going to creches, people with face masks, etc. I think that's really going to have impacted them. And I think we're only scratching the surface, actually, John, of the psychological impacts of all of that. Yeah. Also the AI impact. This is the generation growing up in the world of AI.
Yeah, it's you know, there's a part of this, Mary, that I kind of go, oh, this is like star signs, and you're reading them out, and I'm kind of going, I don't believe in it, but you know something, I see that cynical nature I have that's come from, you know, what was going on at that particular time. But listen, you know, there's lots to be learned from this, and I think that's the piece I'm really interested in, because what I see in workplaces all over the world is that there's can be tensions between these different, generations. Before we kind of jump into that, if I could just ask you, because there's part of me that's wondering, is everybody actually changing? Because, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, sort of Gen Zs and the like, and, you know, the interest in, I'm trying to get at the, you know, the anxiety and the stress and the loneliness. I'm seeing quite a lot of people even in Gen X who are actually experiencing that. The whole world is kind of changing, and how people are linking into that. And one kind of, if I was to kind of, you know, put something forward to you, I'd say that social media has had a phenomenal effect of merging the experiences of people in all of those different generations. Is that right or wrong?
Oh, I think there's no doubt social media has impacted all of us in a positive, but also in a negative way. However, I would challenge that, John, by saying you and I had the benefit of living in the world before the age of distraction and addiction to social media. So I think even in our formative years, like, it's really interesting, even the research on IQ. Gen Z are the first generation where we're seeing a drop in IQ.
A drop?
a drop in IQ, because if you even look at the neuroscience research around brain activation, for example, even writing an essay. So back in the day, you and I would remember going into the library, photocopying journal articles, having to curate and pull together and use critical judgment and analysis. That's very different to going onto Copilot or ChatGPT and saying, give me five bullets on this that I'll expand on.
It's a little bit scary to try and, I mean, like, only in time will we be able to really get the research done and find out what impact that that's actually had on people. Because even just that accessibility to information, and now trying to figure out in a post-truth world, what that's going to be the biggest skill is figuring that out. I'm just interested, you said there that it's the first time that IQ has gone down. Has EQ gone up?
Sadly, no.
Really? Wow.
Sadly, no. And in fact, we're seeing significant drops in emotional intelligence of the younger generations. And in particular, this is coming from Stephen Steen's work in three areas. Number one is independence and autonomy, that whole area of acting independently. The second area we've seen a drop compared to previous generations of the same age is problem solving and critical analysis. And the third area is stress tolerance. So those three areas of emotional intelligence we've seen drop. We've also seen empathy drop, which is very concerning, John. And you know, I think when you consider empathy at its heart, it's around really giving someone your full presence and attention and really truly listening to somebody else's perspective. And, you know, unfortunately, attention spans now are rapidly declining. I think for all of us, but particularly younger generations, they've no tolerance for boredom or stillness. Like, there's no such thing as boredom anymore.
You fill that gap with your phone.
Exactly.
So the anxiety piece then, so let's kind of drill into the Gen Z's, Z's, whatever you want to call them. I mean, it's I'm just interested to know, like, if I'm actually sort of managing, you know, interacting with those. So you're telling me that sort of the stress piece, stress tolerance is low. Why is that, and how can I as a manager kind of manage somebody without kind of, because obviously Gen X, it was grit was the order of the day. So I'll actually be dead honest with you, I was on public transport this morning and there was a lady speaking incredibly loudly and she says, I'm fed up with your generation. And she, it was an employee she was talking to. Now, to be honest, I'd say she was max 30. I thought she was going to be like 50 or 60 or something, the way she was talking. But so I was just really interested in, this is live, this is real. There's a clash in these generations. So if I'm managing somebody who, tell me why their stress tolerance is low and tell me how I can actually manage somebody in that way.
Yes, well, it is. It's very complex and multifactorial. But if I were to lean into two areas why we're seeing very low levels of stress tolerance and resilience among the younger generations, John, I'd say one is parenting. You know, the helicopter, or Professor Gary Cooper talks about the Black Hawk parents, which are helicopters, like combative. Down at the school gates, you will have no adversity. You know, I'm ahead of you, clearing the way for you. And this is creating, there's no battles to fight. There's no resilience to be developed. And also that, even in terms of free time, like play, everything's play dates now, scheduled time, but just going out, climbing trees, all of that, that more scheduled, that safety, that sort of almost obsession around child safety has created a lot of anxiety and nervousness among children and young adults now. So I think the parenting has a lot to answer for. Secondly, technology. So the dissonance between the social self and the actual self. And we're seeing this particularly among young girls. And that is creating a lot of anxiety, a lot of mental health issues. Eating disorders, sadly, are rising at a pace. So they would be two of the key factors. Another,
Just explain that one a little bit further for me so that I completely understand what you're saying there.
Yeah. The social media. So the dissonance between the self that I project on Snapchat, on Instagram, you know, I might take 30 photos and then I'll filter and edit one and put it up there. Yeah. Versus what's actually really going on for me in my world. Okay. Actually, I'm really lonely. I'm really sad. I feel really my self-image is very, very poor because I'm just being fed all these algorithms of these perfect men, women, etc.
How can I compete with perfection that I'm seeing?
Exactly.
And it's not real. Okay.
Exactly that. So a lot of factors have shaped the high levels of anxiety, stress. And in fairness to the younger generations, I mean, when you think about what has been going on in the world for the last 10 years, they've grown up with wars, pandemics, like it's been recessions, like it's been a tough time, really, that they've grown up in. So what can you do as a manager? I think it's about... For me, the big word here is empathy and understanding. And understanding that if you have a 24-year-old on your team that seems to be constantly looking for feedback and reassurance and your attention, to actually realize that, you know what, they've grown up in a world where they've received that through parenting, through education. And if I want to get the best from this person and encourage them to really thrive at work, I will give them, I'll go for that coffee once a week, give them the 20 minutes of your time, because they need that to be happy in work. They need different things.
So is there a perfect match here in terms of my generation and who will be best to manage me? Am I going to be wanting to be managed by a millennial rather than a Gen X?
Oh, well, that is an interesting question. And this is why I think that we really need boomers in the workplace. We need older workers because the younger generation love to be mentored by baby boomers. They're their preferred mentors. The two generations that clash the most are Generation X and Millennials.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they typically you find Gen X are managing millennials because they've grown up, even though they're kind of side by side age wise, they've grown up in really different worlds. And we hear a lot of negative feedback. Gen Xers, you know, oh, they've no work ethic. And and I actually think the younger millennials and Gen Z are bringing a lot of positive change to the workplace. They are prioritizing. Work is just one part of life. Now, it might go to extremes. We see that in the health service where I do a lot of my work and research. You know, for example, you know, if you're with a mother in labor, you can't say, oh, it's 5 o'clock now, I'm off. You know, that discretionary effort is, we are seeing a decline in that discretionary effort in the workplace.
Interesting. So the Gen Xers will just feel that it's, I've got to stay.
Yeah.
Whereas the others are kind of going, it's time up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, John.
So what am I doing then as a manager if I'm managing a millennial?
So millennial, I think that individualized attention is really important for millennials. In my own doctoral research, John, so I looked at engineers, lawyers and accountants, all the millennial generation. And what came up over and over again was, I don't want to be just another number. Like, really get to know me. What are my career ambitions? Support my development. Give me lots of feedback. And therein lies one of the biggest challenges in dealing with millennials. Feedback, feedback, feedback. But they don't like negative feedback. Negative feedback is a significant issue, to the point that that first piece of negative feedback can really set them back. So how you deliver feedback is Very, very important. And I've had countless, countless cases of very well-meaning Boomer and Gen X managers saying, you know, I gave this person, I said, 90% of what you're doing is brilliant. You've got a great career ahead of you. And then they give them that 10%. And you know what? That's all that sticks.
So what's the answer? Because I mean, like, you know, growing up, everybody is told that. What was the classic? Pat, kick, pat. You know, or the praise sandwich, you know.
That's we a very diplomatic way of that's explaining the sandwich, John. I haven't heard that before. Pat, kick, pat. Yeah, I actually believe a coaching style of leadership is really effective. For all of us, but particularly the younger generation. So I think that approach of where you're actually, it's very much a dialogue with the person, you know, how do you think that scenario went? What would you do differently next time? You know, that sort of inclusive approach, they tend to respond a lot better to that than the direct feedback approach.
Interesting. And so millennials, any other advice in terms of when you're dealing with millennials as to how to get the best out of them, I suppose?
Purpose and meaning, corporate social responsibility, really, really important. Not just that one day, you know, painting a nursing home, but actually woven into the fabric of the organization. And I think it's really interesting to see millennials now making choices. Like I heard a good pal of mine is HR director in a corporate finance company, and she had somebody recently, a millennial, at an interview asking, what's your stance on the Russian-Ukraine war? My pal was like totally taken aback. But actually I thought, you know what, that person is clearly very values driven and they want to work in an organization that is aligned with their values. Whereas I think certainly when I would have been interviewing, I wouldn't have dreamt of asking a question like that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And it's a big question as to whether or not organizations and leaders should take positions on issues of the day, because that again is walking on eggshells a little bit. Looking at the Gen Xers, if God forbid, if a Gen Z is managing a Gen Xer, how's that?
And that's exactly what we're seeing, because Gen X now at their oldest are 31, so they are moving into management leadership roles. And I was delivering a keynote at a conference, a medical conference, and these two fabulous young doctors.
Sorry, are you saying Gen Zs are at their eldest 31?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Yes. You said Gen Xers, but
sorry.
By mistake. Don't worry,
I'm getting confused with all the letters. Oh, Gen Z. And these two young, fabulous doctors came up to me and said, Mary, how do we, they would have been in their late 20s, how do we manage Gen X? And let's be honest, we're probably quite tricky to manage.
Yeah. I agree.
And what we know from the studies, Gen X want autonomy, pragmatic approaches, clear, concise, direct information and communication, kind of let them at it. Again, that flexibility piece, really important for Gen X with that sandwich generation and all their shouldering. And definitely not micromanagement.
You're talking about me. I thought that was just me, but you're saying that's all of them. Okay, that's good. If there is sort of somebody experience a bit of conflict in that intergenerational piece, what's the advice?
I think it's very worthwhile to raise generational awareness in organizations. So for example, if I'm working with an organization, I'll always ask for their employee data, age profile, and prepare a generational profile of the organization. So that can be really enlightening. Gosh, I didn't realize like 42% of our employees are millennials, or oh gosh, we only have 6% baby boomers here, or and actually get people, you know, looking at this and going, so what are the strengths here? What are some of the gaps? What should we be doing to enhance intergenerational working? And, you know, simple things, John, like for me, I love when I go into an organization and I see all the different generations, and healthcare typically has that, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, right up to 70 plus working side by side. How can we ensure that from all of our processes, from hiring to retiring, that we have a voice from all the generations? We're hearing a voice from all the generations as part of that. From the job ads we put out, you know, are we excluding certain people of a certain age range or not? And then I think any committees, you know, strategic groups should have the voice of people from all generations as part of that. There's huge opportunities in mentorship, and all the studies really point to that one of the most impactful ways to leverage the strengths of an intergenerational workforce is through mentoring, be that reciprocal mentoring. So having an arrangement where you've a younger person working with an older person and they both are sharing wisdom with each other. Reverse mentoring now is becoming really popular, where you have a younger generation, someone from a younger generation mentoring somebody from an older generation. And I think that is, I've heard such brilliant feedback when organizations actually take that on. And it does require, you know, a little bit of structure and training. You can't just say, off you go now, reverse mentor, off you go. And then our traditional mentoring, where we've the older, wiser person mentoring the younger person. But I think mentoring, if it's done well, it's low cost and very high impact.
And you have a reverse mentor, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I have. My mentor is a 26-year-old occupational psychologist.
Fantastic.
And that has been so enlightening for me. And I'll call her Jane.
Yeah.
So Jane has really helped me understand actually what is going on for her generation. And in particular, she supports me with technology. You know, John, I think we all need to understand the different communication approaches. I don't know. Do you have a Snapchat account, John?
I do not.
That is the dominant platform with teenagers. And I'd say, get on it. Have a look at it. You know, just explore it.
I thought I was cool when I went on TikTok, you know. Because honestly, many people of my generation believe that TikTok is just dancing videos and the like. And it's far from that. I actually had to come off TikTok on the basis that it was overly addictive. It was I stupidly told it I like psychology and it fed me fantastic content. So much so that I was like an hour of my life was gone, just gone. So from that point of view, I actually had to stop it.
Oh, listen, it's so addictive. It is so addictive. But I think, you know, again, it's a better understanding. And the other fun activity I typically do, but there is a sort of a serious, there's a serious message behind it, where I'll often start off my sessions with Gen Z slang. So each generation has its own slang. But Gen Z slang, it's like a different language. It's much more abbreviated. Okay. It is. It stems from...
The vowels are gone, are they?
Oh.
vowels are so yesterday.
Yes. but it's coming out of... the social psychology research is fascinating. It's coming out of LGBTQ+, Black Lives Matter. Like, really interesting. I'm fascinated by the origin of the words they come up with. Yeah. So, I mean, you'll know, you know, like, Riz, which is, like, charisma, presence.
Charisma, yeah.
But one of the most used slang words in the US was Menti B last year. Do you know what a Menti B is, John?
I don't.
So Menti B is mental breakdown. Used in the context of I'm having a Menti B doing my homework. I'm having a Menti B. And then we have words like cap.
You
know what that is? Cap is a lie, something that is true. And it's said with the nod of a head, you know, that's cap. Yeah.
Right.
The other word that, it, and this is fascinating because my young teenagers are using it, and I was speaking to my sister-in-law in Sydney, and her young teenagers are using it constantly as well. Yeah. And the word is Loki.
Loki.
Do you know what that is?
Loki is what?
It means kind of, or I honestly have to admit this. So it's like, it's a really weird one, but it's used. You can't unhear it now. You're going to hear it everywhere.
Yeah, no, exactly. In fact, I think I saw it on graffiti somewhere. I thought it was a tag of somebody, but now I know. Okay, Loki. I'm learning. Yep. Every day is a school day.
I heard, just to position it in a sentence for you, I heard two first-year science students from Trinity on the Lewis the other day, and I was eavesdropping, and one of them said, I'm low-key tired. And I was like, oh.
Right.
Kind of tired.
Kind of tired.
There you go.
So it's a different language. Well, that is a little bit scary when you start to not have the language of the people you're talking to or the like, because that's we talk about sort of cultural versus generational differences and the effect. We might come to that in a second, but let's not leave out the baby boomers. They're still in the workplace and they're not going because they can't afford to retire.
Yes. Well, bring that on is what I say. We need more boomers in the workplace. We need that wisdom, that experience. And sadly, John, I think you'll agree, there's a lot of ageism out there.
Big time.
Big time. And we have the double jeopardy for women, which is if you're older and you're a woman, there's even more discrimination. So I really, you know, I feel quite passionately actually about the need to really leverage the huge strengths that older workers bring to our workplaces.
Yeah. Well, somebody handed me a book that they weren't making a point to me. They knew I was interested in the topic, but it was Invisible Women. And it was talking in general about, you know, when you get to a certain age as a woman, you become invisible. And I just hadn't noticed this at all. Mm-hmm. But the more I read, I was just shocked at how horrible that concept is. And then somebody told me, yeah, well, there's the equal for the males. And I said, and what's that? And they said, it's irrelevance. And I was going, oh my God. there comes a time that people might see you as being irrelevant in the context of, And what you're saying is so true. Like in Japan, obviously, it's the person with the gray hair and the elderly person that, you know, is really deemed to be the one with the knowledge and the wisdom. But it's a scary world we're living in where people are seen to be nearly discretionary once they get to a certain age.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, if we were to look at one of the biggest challenges we're seeing with younger workers, it is mental health.
Okay.
And one of the optimum solutions is to have really strong mentors in the workplace, to have older workers there to support them. So I think we need, you know, that wisdom, that experience. And we also need older workers to reskill, to, you know, stay up to date with technology, communication, and to be given the opportunity to reskill. And often I think we tend to put baby boomers in a corner. You know, that was the great report. Don't put boomers in a corner. And to say, oh, yeah, just, you know, they'll share their knowledge with the young people coming up. But actually, we know from the research on older workers that most older workers want to stay relevant and up to date and want to reskill in, you know, the latest technology and AI, etc. So I think let's ensure that we don't make assumptions.
Mm. So the baby boomers could teach the Gen Z how to make phone calls, could they?
Absolutely. how to have small talk, which I call enormous talk in the workplace. Mm. And you know, John, what's so interesting, I don't know if you've heard of a professional services firm called Azets, A-Z-E-T-S.
Nope.
Azets are a finance, accountancy, tax, professional services organization. And in they're in Ireland, but in the UK, they are doing a pilot study where they're sending their graduates on sabbatical to work in pubs in Yorkshire.
Really?
For 3 months. Because if you've ever worked, I don't know if you've ever worked in a bar or a restaurant or a cafe.
Yeah.
Is there a better place to learn social skills, interpersonal skills, dealing with difficult people?
Mm-hmm. If you want tips.
Yeah. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. And no, that's a good idea. But I mean, like, one of the things I do struggle is my own kids and just the amount of time they spend on their phone. And I'm just wondering, in a workplace environment, is that actually, you know, the new smoking kind of, you know, the way people used to slip out and spend too much time out having a smoke break in the old days? Whereas now they're just desperately trying to, you know, get on their phones. And I can't tell, maybe as a manager, are they working or are they actually, you know, because it's all the same device giving them both work and social. So how do people manage that?
Oh, I think that's really insightful what you've just said. It is like the new smoking, I believe. It's the addiction. Mm-hmm. It is so addictive. And it is really challenging to manage because you also have to see, and I'm not a fan of, you know, ban the phone, no phones at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, the phones are here to stay, and it's the behaviors around the phones. It's not the actual phones. But I think if I go to healthcare again, it's not appropriate to have a phone if you're dealing with patients, for example. Mm. But as you say, the phones are everything. It's very difficult to disassociate from them in the workplace now. It's a bit like in schools. I don't know if you've seen the Danish research that came out last week. They have done a whole U-turn around digital iPads in the classroom. Oh. And they went back to books, which I really, really hope that we can do something similar.
Hey.
And, you know, the initial findings are absolutely phenomenal around improved social behaviors, improved concentration, social relationships in school, academic performance. Everything has improved.
Wow. That's, I mean, if that can be proven by, you know, other research too to back it up, I get it. I understand it has, you know, in research terms, I think it has face validity for me.
Yep.
That's my lived experience. And it's the scariest piece because to me, as we know with the recent court case in the States, you know, they're using the very best of psychology to try and figure out how can they grab our attention. And we're giving one of the most valuable things we have in this world, apart from our own health, that's our attention, and we're giving it away. And you know, the way they always sort of say, beware of, isn't it, Greeks bearing gifts, you know, the horse of Troy, it was shoved in as a gift, but within it, there was something really dangerous. And that's, you know, the social media, they're free, but are they, you know, we're paying the price, I think, constantly for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, back to the point around, thankfully, our brains were developed before we were handed these devices. You think about a 13-year-old now getting access to that and how, you know, that's going to really change and influence the neural pathways of children, of teenagers. It's quite scary, actually.
It really is scary. Mm, mm. So, Mary, this has been fantastic to have this discussion. And I know you've done huge research in it. So if you were just to kind of summarize this for somebody who's operating in a workplace, if you could kind of sort of say, if you're managing X, I was actually saying X, Y, Z, but actually the different generations that we've talked about, what's the standout advice to try and make sure that you avoid sort of conflict and you manage to really get the most out of the people that you're managing? What would that be?
Yeah, great question. And What I would say is often just focusing on generations can be a distraction, and it can be very limiting, because we are making assumptions as well about whole cohorts of people. So while we can, and I do believe that the trends and the research are helpful, I think if you're managing a multi-generational team, the best approach is to lead with emotional intelligence to create a culture of psychological safety and inclusion, no matter what age somebody is. And when I say that, when I mention the area of emotional intelligence, it's about leading with awareness. It's about leading with empathy and understanding. And it's about leading with adaptability. So your ability to flex and adapt your approach and have that empathy, as I mentioned before, for somebody, particularly the younger generations, who are really looking for that recognition and feedback and reassurance. And then equally, when you see somebody of an older generation, to ensure that they are all also included and feel valued and recognized. So, John, it really goes back to the stalwarts of, you know, positive, inclusive leadership, creating psychological safety for your team.
Mm. And as you say, it's not really about sort of, you know, overly focusing on the differences. Yeah. It's actually sort of saying, you know, when it comes down to it, we're all the same. We all need certain things in life that are pretty universal and fundamental.
That's exactly it. I mean, it, you know, for me, it comes back to self-determination theory. You know, that really underpins all of this. And no matter what age you are, I think we all want to be competent at what we're doing and have the skills to do it. We want to be autonomous, just let us do it. And most importantly, we want to feel part of something at work, that connection, being part of a team. And I think that really underpins all of the other diversity grounds.
Absolutely. And if that's a big plug for the podcast we did with Richard Ryan. And he was fantastic. Yeah. He has so much to offer. So that self-determination theory. Mary, thank you so much for that. I think we'll catch up again because you've got new research coming out shortly. So I wouldn't mind doing an add-on to this. But that's been fantastic today. So we've learned a lot. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Well, my absolute thanks to Dr. Mary Collins for such wonderful insights, which really, really help to just position the differences between the different generations. But equally, as Mary says, it's all about trying to come together and work well together. And for those of you who may have wondered about the title of the actual podcast today is Who is in My Generation? For those of you who don't know, back years and years and years ago in that generation, there was a band called The Who, and they had a famous song called My Generation. So there you go. It all makes sense now. So thank you so much for joining us for this wonderful podcast today, and hopefully you'll join us for the next one on the Work Healthy Podcast.